The Jack Wilson Quartet featuring Roy Ayers on Vibes with Ramblin'. Jack Wilson, of course, is on piano, Monk Montgomery on bass, and Farner Barlow on drums. This was recorded in 1966. I do love my oldies, I do. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to be talking things largely from your point of view today. But before we get to that, I just want to say a hearty congratulations to Robert Bailey from Harlem, who's a very popular guy, a very, very popular guy, especially since he came forward yesterday and made it known that, yes, he is a Powerball winner, but he has to split the $688 million bounty with another Powerball winner from, I think, somewhere out west. But, you know, it's interesting. All right, so you're splitting $688 million. That's $344 million apiece. And do you know what you get after taxes? You're getting $125. This Robert Bailey is getting $125 million. And after taxes, no, sorry, he's getting $344 million, but after taxes, he's getting $125 million. So deep is the cut. Now, I don't think I don't think that's fair. I just don't think it's fair to take such a steep cut. But in any event, he bought his ticket on Fifth Avenue and 126th Street in Harlem at the West Harlem Deli. So, yay. I know, Robert, today you have lots and lots and lots and lots of friends. And, you know, we've always been good. We've been tight. Okay. But really, congratulations. And I hope you use it well. Okay. So we have some things that we're going to be talking about today. Mostly we'll be talking about things that we think we should pay more attention to since they've been in the news, but not in the way that, you know, we've seen the coverage going, not in that direction, but because we have a different sensibility, one hopes, and we have a different appreciation for how things translate at our level. So let's take a look at some of those angles today from your point of view. All right. What would you say some of the major stories that you didn't hear in the past week? Major stories you didn't hear about, and or if you heard about them, you have so many more questions than are being answered at the moment. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's share what you think. Are stories that you wanted to know more about, but you didn't quite get there with the regular media. You just didn't get there. And you wish that there was something more to the story that you could learn, or maybe a story was covered, but the critical angle of the story was left out. They didn't do a good job getting to the critical angle of the story. So the story, for all intents and purposes, was kind of underreported or misreported. Ma'at, you start us off today.
Coming. Be right there. Okay. Thanks. Greetings and love to the beloved family.
Thank you.
There's so many, you know what I'm trying to say, but let me just start with one. And there was some news about the fact that the prosecutor of Saudi Arabia is going to be, I mean, the way that systems work, they say they're going to be tried for capital crimes, so they're already dead. So it's just, you know, there's no names of who these people are. And if they were the ones that carried out the, and actually there were 15 plus, the killing of the Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, it just seems that, you know, we're on the edge. We're tipping off the world. He was writing about the war in Yemen and, you know, the horrible, that was his last column, the humanitarian crisis. So instead of addressing, and this, of course, brings in that the Trumpists and his son-in-law, if it's just such a complex situation because Congress, Representative Ro Khanna, tried to bring some legislation to stop that war, and of course, you know, the trickery of the Congress pulled it back, and that's not how it's supposed to work. And so, I guess what I'm trying to say is that is such an unbelievable situation. We saw the one African guy over there, or one of them, was being charged initially, so he's probably in the mix. And then, of course, the fact that we have a situation where there doesn't seem to be accountability for who was responsible, and that is Mohammed bin Salman. And it's just going to be more disposal of life in pursuit of just something that's almost unfathomable.
What's the story here, as you see it? What is the story?
Well, the story is that it seems that Trump came up with this idea, and that's why they went to Saudi Arabia, you know, was the first stop on a foreign trip. It seems that there's just going to be kind of a weather the storm, cover-up attitude so they can go with this idea. In other words, they made the wrong choices by going with Saudi Arabia. And that region it seems like it's the situation in Yemen. I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen those pictures where little babies and children have just bones, you know.
But what is the story? I mean, sum it up in a sentence. What, from the media's coverage, what are we to understand the story to be?
Well, I haven't seen a lot of the media coverage, but what I did see is was actually on MSNBC Morning Joe. I think they actually did some good coverage in terms of the atrocious, you know, the moral atrocity of the situation.
What is the situation, as you understand it? What is the situation?
Well, it's a situation that's going to seem to be impossible to unravel.
What I'm saying is, from the media's coverage, what are we to understand happened here?
So that's the point, that we're not really getting the actual what happened
something here. No, we got something. We
got
the fact that Jamal Khashoggi, who is a columnist for the New York Post, who at one point lived...
And for the Washington Post.
The Washington
Post. Not the New York Post, right.
Sorry, the Washington Post. he decided that he had to go to, and he lived at one point in Saudi Arabia, and he is contemplating getting married, and in order to do that, he had to get some papers straightened out. The appointment was made for him to do that at the Saudi embassy in Turkey. His wife or his...
Yeah, it's a consulate.
Is Turkish.
Saudi consulate in Turkey, correct.
Right. Okay, so he gets there, and then he vanishes. She waits as instructed. He gave her his phones and instructs her to wait and instructs her that should anything go wrong, she should call certain numbers and so forth. Well, she waits for 11 hours. He does not emerge from the consulate. And nobody knew where he ended up, where he went. It was determined after a while that he was attacked almost immediately after entering the consulate.
Correct.
And then removed from the consulate in pieces. He was killed, dismembered, and the body disposed of by what they call a local operative. The suspicion is that Khashoggi was killed on the orders of Mohammed bin Salman, who is, for all intents and purposes, he's seen as the new leader of Saudi Arabia, and the consensus of opinion was that somehow he directed this operation to occur. Now the question is, from the international community, A, did he order Khashoggi's death, assassination? B, where is Khashoggi's body? C, what happened to it? And who's responsible? Today or yesterday, we learned that 17 people, 15 of whom presumably are among a group that arrived the day prior to Khashoggi's disappearance at the consulate, probably are among them, but the word from Saudi Arabia is that they are to be tried for murder. They are responsible. They will be tried. They will be executed.
Utrice, actually, the news that I've heard on a couple of sources is that only 5 people are being, you know, first they said the larger number, and now the report is that 5 people are being charged or tried on capital crimes. And they also came up with a different way that he died, which always morphs, in that they, instead of this, the last story was strangulation, now they're saying he was given a lethal injection and then dismembered. So that's a totally shifting story. And if we have eyes to see,
what I want you to do is to, from your own perspective, based on what you have read or seen or heard so far about the story, what is unfolding in your mind based on what you have been exposed to in the way of information about the story? What in your mind is the big question here?
The big question to me would be, is there going to be any real accountability? I mean, it's pretty obvious as to how that system works there, as to who, you know, I mean, you really can't dispute that it would have been Ben Salman who would have ordered, you know, or tacitly agreed to. I don't think the people under him would have initiated such an act on their own. It was too much coordination, you know. They had to book those planes and the cars and everything. That would have come from the so-called Crown Prince.
All right, well, you know, it's convenient to say it's a Crown Prince, but I'm saying to you, just look for more information, see how it unfolds. Because I can tell you, I could almost guarantee it, we don't know what the heck went on there. We don't know as much as we think we know. Even though the media are giving us the impression that, well, they have put their hands on something. But what is it? And it also, the mystery also surrounds Khashoggi himself. Here's a man who used to be in the inner circles of the Saudi Arabian royalty, if you will.
Yes, yes, correct, that family. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then he suddenly appears, he leaves, and then appears as a columnist for the Washington Post. So the question, there are questions about that. How do you end up, how do you go from being in the inner circles now, where he is privy to information and personally known to the highest levels of Saudi government? How does he end up being a columnist for the Washington Post? Why do they insist that he was a journalist for the Washington Post? Come on. There's a lot going on here that we don't know. All we have to do is just wait and see how else they massage this story. Mm. There's a lot of massaging still to do. We have to know exactly what Khashoggi was in Saudi Arabia, what his affiliation was with the Saudi government and the royal family? Did he, in his capacity, in that capacity, with in such closeness, was he more than a journalist? And we have this question, and it pertains now to a large number of so-called reporters and experts on television and in the newspapers and major media, who are presented to us as experts, when the proper terminology might possibly be that they're serving two masters. They are presented as journalists, but are they? I remember being in Moscow during the Glasnost era, and we got wind that Senator Sam Nunn from Georgia and other elected officials from the United States were to have a news conference, and I thought it would have been fascinating to go. So I went. And it was a lot of saber rattling. You know, Sam Nunn came there almost with his boxing gloves on, and in typical American fashion was stoking and provoking the Russian government with his comments. They weren't really substantive. They were, it was like a slugfest, a one-man slugfest. He was just hurling all these criticisms at the Russian government. I asked him about whether it was a prudent thing at that time to engage in saber rattling. What actually was his substantive message? He didn't have one. But here's the interesting thing. There was a reporter, an African-American, there. And as soon as the news conference was over, Nunn gave him the yellow pad, pages he tore out, I should say, from the yellow pad with his notes. And he said, "Here's the story." And I'll be damned. It appeared the next day as coverage. So many reporters fulfill double roles. You might even go so far as to say they function almost like double agents. He didn't cover that news conference. I attended it. And the story should have been entirely different. Instead, Nunn gave him his notes and outlined in those notes, one would assume, all the salient points that should be covered. And they showed up as ordered the next day as a story. So this story is very important. We don't know half of what is going on here. And we have to look into this issue of how routinely the media basically incorporates spying and all other kinds of unsavory operations. They give people positions, big-time titles, they're paid well, and next thing you know, they are analysts. But there are special kinds of analysts, and we don't know enough of Khashoggi yet about where he came from, what was his history with the Saudi government when things were rolling along very nicely, what role did he play, how close was he into the inner circles, which would make him a very valuable guy on one side of the line, where people would be happy, media organizations would be happy to have somebody like that who is a, quote, journalist, but could be useful to, say, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the intelligence gathering people. He knows things. He knows things that most people don't know because he is operating within a level that would require tremendous trust and clearance, a very sensitive position. And that he translated, obviously, into value. He gets a prized plum position at the Washington Post. He continues to be described as a journalist. Okay. We'll wait and we'll see. So that's what you do when you listen to these stories. You just sit back because all the other stuff is distraction. This is the Saudi government settling scores. This is the Saudi government knowing that he is a prized plum. He's in the United States and ostensibly under the protection of the United States because he's living here now. But that does not erase the memory in some parts of the world about what you're supposed to do and not do. So I'm waiting to see how that part of the story unfolds and how we get to appreciate perhaps another dimension of the relationship between Khashoggi and the Saudi government. You'll notice that the United States has made its perfunctory statements about how ghastly it is and, you know, what an assault it is on human rights and so forth. And we all agree. But that's not the story. So we'll wait. And we'll see. Thanks for getting us started today, Ma'at. Really happy to hear from you. Ron from Connecticut, you're on the air. What story do you think was underreported this week?
Well, before I tell you that, I would like to say that I daily pray for your full recovery.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate those thoughts. Thank you so much.
Wonderful, and I hope you feel as wonderful as you sound. All right, so the story today for me goes back to something I could not have heard on PBS or NPR. So I surely heard it on PRN.FM. I don't even think I heard it on WBAI. The question is, who is the real Bashar al-Assad? This man, the leader of Syria, has been constantly vilified and demonized. Poison gas on his own people, right outside the capital city. Barrel bombs. So what I need is confirmation from something I heard not too long ago. And that is simply that Bashar al-Assad arises in the morning, gets ready to go to work, leaves his middle-income apartment house. Excuse me.
That's all right.
Somebody, a spoofer, trying to get in on my cell phone, trying to break my concentration, I suppose. So he gets in his little compact car. He leaves his middle-income apartment house in Damascus, and he drives to work. Parks his car in the parking garage or whatever and goes to his office. Meanwhile, every day, his wife walks their children several blocks to school. And it was noted that she doesn't dress up fancy. She wears no jewelry. Brings her kids to school and walks home. So she does that walk twice a day. Is this... And I'm to understand that his people love him. So all I can conclude, along with some other people, is that the moderate rebels, so desperate because they're losing, are the ones in a position to do a false flag attack with poison gas. How could someone whose people love him so much? So, I mean, who's right? I want to follow up on this story. I want more told about this person because obviously it's all linked to the saber rattling. I mean, it's not just that. We are on a high-speed rail fast track to war with Iran. Why? You know, I've heard it said...
Why do you think that that's the case from your perspective?
I mean, why do I think this may be true?
No, why do you think that this is happening? The way it is unfolding, the way it is being reported as it unfolds.
It's part of the larger plan that General Wesley Clark illuminated us with to take down 7 Middle East countries in 5 years, to just rearrange the whole thing because they're not cooperating with our way of life. We want to bring democracy. So it's part of that whole plan.
Well, you know, here's the thing. In situations like this, where there is an absence of absolute proof and evidence, we are left with conjecture. In some cases, conjecture could be right on target. But we still have to admit and recognize it is just that. It's conjecture. We have no proof in some cases, many cases, to substantiate what we feel at gut level. So all we have to do is we're waiting for the unfolding of information. And then, you know, retroactively, you see whether it makes sense or not. We have no way in some of these cases, the Khashoggi case is one of them, we have no way of knowing independently what is the absolute truth. All we can do is reasonably assume things, but then that's what it is. These are assumptions. And in most cases like this, and there have been many, many such cases, where it takes a while for the absolute truth or for the near absolute truth to be known.
Well, since this is a World War III in action now, I think so much hinges, Utrecht, on the revelation of the question, who is Bashar al-Assad? So much hinges on this. And so my gut tells me he's been lied about by people like, you know, may God save us from John Bolton and Mr. and Mrs. Pence.
Well, I have issues about that. I think you're right with the concern about Mr. Bolton, the concern about Mr. Pence, the concern about Donald Trump, the concern about the power elite and what they want, because they have at their disposal, they have a fully equipped army, navy, air force, a full military contingent that could do what they want done. This is the story of wealth and the misuse of wealth. So again, I think you raise an interesting subject, but I don't know that we have seen or, you know, we are comfortable with the evidence that we have before us to make a definitive judgment about it. You at least raised a question, and that's really important.
Yes. I believe that personalities like Amy Goodman have been completely snookered. Think the white helmets are all cool and everything when they're just an arm of ISIS. And you know, you and I both know, and most of your listening public know, who ISIS really is, who created them, and who sponsors them.
Well, stay on that story.
I want to monitor
the developments and let us know whether you see evidence that you are getting more and more comfortable with the information that you are beginning to be exposed to. Okay? Thanks, Ron, for your call today.
Thank you,
Bruce from New York. You're on the air. Hello, Bruce. Okay. Bruce was there, but now he's not there. 888-874-4888. You see, when you start analyzing stories, and we know we have to, I mean, we don't have individually the resources to do the kinds of investigation and so forth that would satisfy our needs and our kind of need for information. So we're stuck with what is out there. The thing is, we have to glean through what is out there, and we have to question what makes sense and what does not make sense. What do you feel comfortable with, quote, knowing, unquote, and what we're not comfortable with knowing based on the reporting that is going on? A lot of reporting is going on, but I'm not so sure that we should readily accept it as legitimate or true. remember, these information makers or distributors have a lot riding on the reports that they offer, on the role that they serve in our society to condition people's minds, to make us more comfortable with this view as opposed to that view. This is why they call it mass media. It's how the masses are trained and conditioned to accept what we think is true. And the Khashoggi case, we aren't even close. We're not even close to this thing. And yet people are reporting on it as if we know everything there is to know. And they're not questioning at all the central issue here. And this is just an example. The central issue is they've exempted Khashoggi himself from investigation, which is exactly the first place I go. What is the relationship to Khashoggi and the intelligence community of Saudi Arabia and his relationship to the intelligence community of the United States? How does the Post explain that he is a columnist? And they've given him the veneer of legitimacy to say he is a journalist, a damn good journalist. Okay. But why do we not understand that he has a context? That is the story. To me, that's the story. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're sounding very well today.
I'm hanging in. Just to get people upset.
All right, don't go into can opener mode. Now, come on. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you got an email I sent you some time ago in regards to an interview you had weeks ago with Charles Rattel. And was it the same Jerome Corsi that was in?
Yes.
Okay. And it was,
who
I don't know if you read my.
Pardon?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what sparked my memory on that. So I sent you an email about that because I was, matter of fact, when I talked to you that day, I said, I couldn't sleep because I was just so incensed at the way he was treating you during that interview. And then it was so funny. You had a caller from, I think his name might be Gerald, from Maryland. And he, boy, I'm telling you, Utrecht, he spelled it out exactly as I wrote my email. So, you know, it wasn't just me that was noticing this. And it was amazing as that interview went on. So anyway, I'm not going to spend my time on that. But that's just interesting. That's just really interesting. But and to back to the how you guys started, you know, you and my eye, yeah, that's very interesting. And I that is not to be discounted. We really don't know. We really don't exactly. That's what they present us with, but that happens all the time. You put people, these security agencies put people in. You know, once somebody has a passport, they're a perfect person to set somebody up in that type of thing. But to answer my answer to your question is the largest unreported story is the president's mental health breakdown. Because at this point.
Really?
I predict it was about a month ago. We talked. I said, well, he has about 4 weeks. Because remember, it's when he went on his rampage, all these Nazi rallies that he went on around the country instead of working. I mean, when he announced it, I was like, he can't go on tour. He said he was going on tour all through September and October. And I said to myself, well, you know, when is he going to be working?
What brings you to the conclusion that he is undergoing or he's experiencing a mental health breakdown? Where did you see evidence of that?
Oh, all you have to do is listen to the radio. Or okay, I'll be very simple. All right. he has hunkered himself down. He's not responding to his duties. Or you could really see it manifest when he went to France. And after the midterms, he could not even show up. I mean, why go to France and not even show up? Okay, fine, you're worried about your hair or whatever. The fact that he doesn't even have competent people around him to explain to him the impact of his actions. So then he comes back to the United States, and he fails to go to Arlington. Then his wife fires someone. See, we're back to Woodrow Wilson. We're back to where the president is mentally incapacitated. Which, you know, why is the media just now catching up with his mental illness? See, this pressure, there's so much pressure on him now. I don't know that he will recover from this. I'm not confident. And I really believe that he's been on some type of amphetamines or something to keep that schedule up. And now he's crashing and he's paranoid. And he's having to fill out these questions from the investigation from Mueller or Mueller. And remember, we have all types of folks that the investigation has under their wing now. President Trump's personal accountant, Butina, a verified Russian spy who was infiltrated the NRA and the far-right wing Christian folk who gave money to the campaign. Then we have his son, who's about to be indicted. I feel strong that Donald Jr. is going to be indicted for a number of things. Anyway, the pressure. So that's the underreported. They gloss it over. They say, well, he's lashing out and he's damn near pissed at everyone because he's hunkered down. He's lost it now. You see, he has no friends. And see, this goes back to his sociopathy. His interpersonal relationships are flawed. They have been for decades. You know, he's a user. That's another, you know, no empathy, a user, cannot be contrite, delusional at times. So, you know, this is very predictable. But who's running the country?
Here's the thing that I think you're missing, and I want you to go there, which is, how is it that you have come to this conclusion, but the media, as you pointed out, generally are presenting Trump as a very complex guy who is misunderstood. He's quirky, yes, but this is who he is. He is just being himself. There's nothing unnatural or unusual about his behavior. Mm-hmm. It is we who just don't get it about this personality type. And look, I'm giving you some deep analysis here. I don't expect that it should engender some kind of chuckles.
No, I'm laughing because they think we're silly.
This is the thing. They keep saying that, you know, he's just an unusual guy, that the kind we've never met before. And we have to adjust to him. We don't understand his brilliance. It's quirky.
Oh,
in fact,
God.
I actually saw that word, quirky.
Brilliant?
Yeah.
Okay. That's frightening.
It's frightening, but this is what is going on. The more that they should actually stop and say, listen, we have a crisis here, and we cannot ignore it any further. We just have to get to it and get somebody to tell us what it is we ought to do. The political leadership is not interested in, quote, embarrassing the President of the United States with a charge of, you know, mental incompetence and to the point where he's a danger to the country in the way he's operating. We have had psychiatrists and psychologists warn us, the duty to warn. It was under that imprimatur that they issued this report, a comprehensive report.
Right.
And still, you know, we're seeing lots of things happening here in which the president is not directly in control. So what do you think ought to be done?
What do I think should be done? I think that we should talk about this more, because we don't hear this conversation in the for-profit media. You don't hear this conversation. People just politely shrug it off. But this is serious business, because obviously, we have to break this, and I'll be quick. It's a series of questions. Okay, is the president a statesman? No, that's one of his main jobs is being president. He's not that. Is he functioning and fulfilling his duties? Right now, he is not. Yesterday, the press secretary said there's a lid on the president. He's not functioning. He went to France to go to a ceremony that he did not attend. Then he came home and didn't fulfill a function. He's not functioning. So there are a series of questions. So we know what we have to do is really get this out. People need to ask questions, write newspapers. Bring this out in the open. This is obvious. Now, the mental health community has spoken out. But as I told you before, it's complicated. You know, if you're not on tenure, do you want to make a lot of waves? Because mostly your research is on soft money. So you have to look at where your money is coming from. And, you know, folks are scared of losing their money. You know, it was very bold of Brandy, Dr. Lee, to come out. Brandy, yes. Well, I remember her first name. But anyway, you know, duty to warn. And she's not the only one. Remember, now, there's another psychiatrist, and he was interviewed on another talk program. I won't say the name. But he made the observation that, you see, for sociopathy, all you have to do is directly observable behavior. And this current fascist mentally, he's a fascist number one now, and he's mentally ill, and no good can come of a mentally ill fascist. So anyway, the doctor.
Well, it's significant. It is very significant that he rebirthed himself. He rebranded himself.
Mm-hmm.
He went from the Make America Great Again to I am a nationalist. And it's almost suggests, you know, like a guy going into a closet and he's doing some supposed thinking. He comes out and he's a totally different person psychologically. We don't know it, but he has gone through some kind of a change.
In his mind.
He's a legend in his own mind. And everybody has to do exactly as he says, because he cannot abide anybody opposing his views or doing something other than what he tells them to do. He can't cope with that.
May I make one observation?
Sure.
And this has to do with the Mueller investigation and this very strange and terrible nomination, the temporary nomination of Whitaker as Attorney General. Because that's very contentious. But this is what I'm concerned about. If he is indeed acting Attorney General, he has access to all the passwords, all the information that Mueller has accumulated, which would allow him to funnel, you know, give that information to the president, so the president could see what Mueller has on him, what he has on him, and this could indeed lead to more pressure on the president.
He doesn't need to do that to feel pressured. It is clear what is going on. Mueller is getting closer and closer to his inner circle and eventually to him. It's a creeping thing, but it's happening. What is amazing to me is that the country has not gone into full alert around the mental state of the president and whether the president should continue to be president of the United States until we get certification that he is mentally okay.
This is a major issue. It is, and this is, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up. Well, this is the time. While at least a very enlightened part of our constituency is ready to do things, this is something we should all be able to agree on across the aisle, is that there has to be some sort of mental health and physical health and a mental health evaluation for anyone who wants to be president, because we cannot have this happen again. We really, this is the time. You know, that's something that we can agree on. You know, I think everyone should be able to agree on that. Is that
Thank you so much. Okay. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. We have one more call to go, I think, Lamont, before the program ends. I just wanted to let people know, if you haven't been able to get on today, and I see quite a few who haven't, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow, so don't have any apprehensions about that. I'm very, very cool with that. I like people to have their say, but not feel, you know, upset if they don't get on today. There will be the opportunity to do that tomorrow. Okay, so Lamont, you're on the air.
How you doing, Latrice? How you doing?
Oh, okay. How are you?
Oh, great. Well, hanging in there. There seems to be a huge level of gaslighting that's affecting the American population on many different fronts.
Explain gaslighting.
Gaslighting is a psychological form of abuse, emotional and psychological abuse, targeted on a subject to question their reality, question and doubt their position and their perspective for any sort of nefarious agendas, control, manipulation, chaos. And I think the overall umbrella, if you will, of the subject matters that are discussed in the news and political diaspora and also the economic and the media has a tinge, if not a whole agenda, of gaslighting placed upon it. For example, and this is a very quick example, there are unknown elements involved into these fires in California domestically.
Oh, thank you for raising that. That was at the top of my list today.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So we have situations here where on social media, Instagram, YouTube videos, where there are videos of people who are actually driving through the aftermath in Thousand Oaks area and seeing that there are houses on fire, there are cars are searched, but there are trees that are still alive and flourishing. And the residents there and people are very puzzled that why are the houses burned to a crisp? Why are the cars seized and searched and parked on the roadside here and there? Why are these bird's eye views of these particular residencies demolished? Yet next to it, they have a forest plush. And then, of course, there is a vast amount of land, acres of land, that have been, burned to the crisp. But those of some people have stated that is something called direct energy reference, DEWs, or some sort of smart meters that are gone off in these residences where 70,000 or over 70,000 houses have been burnt down. Over 50 deaths have been reported so far. This is a news that I don't see being investigated in mainstream media or even on, your Amy Goodman Democracy Now! Or your the Grudge Report or RTV or the Young Turks or take your pick on the alternative media outlets. I know there are residents out there who are...
You know what? You have to appreciate something about the pace at which you cover certain kinds of occurrences. And this is unprecedented. This is unprecedented. It is overwhelming. And no one person can actually do this. You have to have teams of people doing this because it involves so many different aspects, many of which we don't understand. Like if you talk to a firefighter involved in responding to this immense three sets of fires that have consumed hundreds of thousands of acres of land and, you're correct, almost 60 people killed and so forth. We're not used, as lay people, we're not used to really appreciating the dimension of a fire and particular kinds of fires. And there you have all kinds of elements mixed up in this conflagration. You have climate change, which was one of the top things I wanted to talk about today. The president absolutely refusing to make any connection between climate change and the fact that you have hundreds of thousands of acres of land. You and I see trees, but how many of the trees are dead trees? How many of these trees are actually like tinder boxes? They just need a little something to get them going, and next thing you know, you have an out-of-control fire. You have the issue of the wind. Where does the wind blow? How does it affect the intensity of fires? There are lots of things that we don't know as lay people. We don't understand it yet. To really get an understanding of, we really need to be schooled on this kind of fire. We haven't seen it at this level up close yet. Even though it has happened before.
It may not even started with a fire. There's been reports that because of a Secretary of State, once upon a time, Hillary Clinton sold part of the property and land to China to pay off a debt of interest of Treasury notes.
We are going to be dealing with this story for a long time. The main thing, the first thing is to save lives and protect people, and then we get to the nitty-gritty of it all. I'm hearing the music, which tells me it's time to go. Thank you all for calling. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. We can continue our discussion then. All right. Bye-bye.